Okay, welcome back, everybody. We'll commence this afternoon's session. Again, we'll have to adapt according to the speakers that are here. I'm not sure that all of the speakers that are scheduled are here, but we'll see how the afternoon goes, and we'll adapt as we go along. Firstly, I would like to know if Mohammed Amron is here, and if you could. Come to the front, and we'll start off. We'll kick off with your presentation. Thank you. Mohammed Amron is making a presentation on wastewater use for irrigation in the Jati Luhur Integrated Irrigation System. Thank you.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Mohammed Amron. I'm a commissioner of such kind of river basin organizations, public corporations, Jasa Tirta II, which I would like to say something about wastewater use for irrigation in Jati Luhur, irrigated irrigation system in Java Islands. It's a thanks to the presentation of South Africa that gave some definition for that. And then I would like to say some things about this area. It's a descriptions, development of revision, optimizing in an integrated way, and conclusions. This is about the area. Julie is in a Java Island. This is quite well-known islands. It's really dense and populated area. This is only 7% of the land area of Indonesia, and but this is supported about 80% or 60% of the rice productions. So that's rice is a staple food for Indonesian. So this is in West Java, actually. So this is the area. Then encompassing several rivers, and then three cascade dams over there. So that's quite large dams in West Java. And actually, this is the area was really, really urbanized, because Jakarta is capital city. It's located around over there. So that's in this case, that will be a lot of urbanizations and also industrial area coming to that irrigated area. So that's cover actually 12,000 kilometers of river basins from west to the east, and between two provinces, West Java and capital city of Jakarta, actually operated since 1967. And as mentioned earlier, there is three dams, so that's cascade for that. And then combination of existing irrigation systems that irrigations actually built before, long before 1923 and 25. So that's combining several irrigation systems. So that then combined through potential local sources among the system, west, east, and north Tarum, I will show you later. And total irrigation area actually is for 240,000 hectares of paddy fields. Okay. This is actually the system, and then maybe it's too small. So there's schemes like that, the network. So this divided, so from three cascade dams, and then bring water to the west, and also to the east, and also to the north. So that's the totals of the irrigation system of the area. As I mentioned earlier, there's growing human activities, land use change, and outskirt development. Change is conversion, land conversions to the urban and industrial purposes. So that's actually, I will show you later, there's a lot of changes in terms of agricultural lands, then a decrease, and then another new area that we will show you later. But still, that we have to promote food security. That's 10 million tons of rice. This is the increasing unit that exceed the water supply. So that's possibly trigger intensify water conflict, especially during the dry season. So that I would like to say, well, I don't know if this is quite clear or not. So this brown, actually the old systems, but I mean the irrigation area. But red, this is already altered to another, either industries or urban area. But newly developed irrigation systems, actually on the outskirts of the kind of urban area like that, so that possibly there will be extracts or from wastewater or from industries and urban area. But then that's in order to optimizing the standard, I mean, we have to apply this water quality standard, which is for the group B for drinking water, group C for fisheries, livestock, and group D for agriculture, urban spaces, industry, and power, and also government regulations, water first class for drinking water, second class for water creation industries, and a third class for fresh water, fish farming, irrigation, and irrigation. And the last class, well, still for irrigations. And then the monthly basis water quality monitorings in 90 locations and reservoir, rivers, and canals throughout the system. Then we show you the kind of not clear here. This is the area. I mean, some and also quite dirty water here. Secondary canal, in fact. So that's already like that. And next, also that several secondary canal potential like that. And that quality, and also like that, for instance. Wow, this is also that people or farmer built their own pump from the secondary canals. And then this is a conditions like that. But in practical way, taken by farmers using wastewater as their alternative source of water. It's a simplified condition in the field zone and the previous slide. It is done by using several approaches. For instance, using pumps to deliver water from existing source of water to their paddy fields. And wastewater here means wastewater from domestic, agriculture, and other activities that are discharged back into the system with its carried over and or even in drainage canal. So that's not only that supply water, but also they use a secondary drainage canal for supply. And then in order to comply standard, several quality measures are taken, analyzed within the environmental agencies, the provincial environmental agencies, and some result zones in this. This is talking about the dissolved oxygen. So that goes like that. And then this is a class 4 standard, actually, up to that figure. And then this is for the BOD in a certain area. Let's see that just like that. But this is the class 4 standard. Okay. And this is for the pH. So that's still under the range. So that this is for the maximum and minimum for class 2 standard. So in conclusion, that growing human activities have impact on demand, new developed and developing areas, and transformation from agricultural also followed by emerging new agricultural lands. Suppressed water supply, alternative source must be trying to find out another sources. New agricultural lands use water from nearest available source since they do not have any other sources. With water from industries, household, and other activities discharged back into the water body. So that water quality monitoring should be done to comply with the standard of irrigation as stipulated, I mentioned earlier. And overall, water quality on monitoring points relatively still comply with the standard. So that's my presentations concerning the use of wastewater for irrigation. So that's all. Thank you.
Presentation. I think one of our questions before raised, I think the gentleman from Aotearoa raised the question about how this is actually a very common occurrence in many countries. And so here we have an example. Let's open the floor up to questions. Are there any questions for Dr. Amron?
Yeah, one question. So, so you were speaking about describing the different water quality, and which is clearly defined. My question is there any analysis on the rice which is produced to see what may be the contamination of this rice?
Well, unfortunately, I don't have any data about the rice. But in terms of water quality, still under the standard that's given by the local environmental policy. So that's the point. I mean, within the standard. And the only metals in those standards is zinc. So zinc still under the standard. So that's perhaps this is the... So that... Then that every month there is a monthly checks for in the 90 points of for the water quality monitorings actually, but I don't know whether there's already checks for the rice production for that area. I mean that's.
The microphone is coming.
I have a couple of questions. First, you say that to use the water, the wastewater, there is a categories like A, B, C, D. To use certain crops depends on the quality. So force the people to be restricted with these crops? Or the farmers, accept to be restrict with the crops, how you can, I mean, monitor this restriction with the farmers. Second is the water delivering is free of charge, or there is some fees to versus getting the water for the system?
Yes, the last question, this is free of charge for the farmer. I mean, free of charge, so that irrigation is free of charge. So, but for the industries and domestic water supply, they have to pay for the retributions or something like that. So that's for the... Then water has been classified based on the qualities within the group, so that's whether that can be used for drinking water or can be used for the fisheries and livestock, or for the rest is for the agriculture, urban business, etc. So based on the classify. And then for the irrigations, there is no restrictions concerning this is mainly for the petty rice irrigations. Majority is for rice irrigation, since the area actually is rice production area, since I mentioned earlier that is the largest irrigation schemes in Java, to 240,000 hectares. So within those areas. Yeah.
But you need to have a protection for the farmers, yeah. Some measures, like and to monitor the groundwater, because this water, a drainage water from the irrigation, put in back the groundwater. So they need to monitor the groundwater, and you need to protect the farmers and people work in the field.
Yes. As I mentioned earlier, that there's a checks on the water qualities. I think it's about 18 parameters. And then from 18, only 10 required. I don't have any these details, actually. I have it in my. But then from that point, still under that these classifications, so actually then only several points or several times within a year this will increase, perhaps due to the dry seasons and etc. So that's lower lower water. But another point is this based on irrigation is three reservoirs. So water is actually available within the whole year available. And also, in fact, provide drinking water for the capital city of Jakarta, which is about 60% of the water from this area is bring to Jakarta. And then they have neutralized and a water supply for Jakarta populations. So this is being used for actually not only for irrigations, but also water supply for Jakarta. This is capital city of Indonesia.
So. Do you have a problem with the mosquito and the flies, or no problem?
Pardon?
Do you have a problem with the mosquitoes and the flies, or no?
Well, mosquitoes, yeah. I think that... normal as mosquitoes, especially during the dry seasons. But this is actually in the most in the mostly close to the oceans, with these more marshes or swampy area. Oh, where is my? So this is in the. Usually it's in this area. This is more swampy, marshes. But yes, mosquitoes, of course. But in fact, maybe there is no malaria in this area. So that's what's a possibility. But dengue is maybe often, yeah. But for daytime mosquitoes, not nighttime mosquitoes.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much, Dr.
Thank Amara. You.
It was actually, I found that a very interesting talk myself, but it opens up a lot of other questions as well. And I heard questions about, what the effects of this would be on yield, what the effects are on health. And, we kind of touched on those topics through some of the other presentations earlier today. And obviously, we need to look into it a little bit more with this particular irrigation system as well. The next presenter I would like to call is, I don't know whether she's here, is Leila Karimi here to give a presentation on wastewater use in arid agricultural zones in Iran. Okay, well, maybe she'll come later, but in the meantime, I'd like to call Dr. Sophia from India. Thank you very much, Dr. Sophia.
Good evening to all. I have not come prepared for this presentation because we have been given only poster presentation. And at this point of time, I would like to express my sincere thanks to both the chair and the moderator for giving me an opportunity to present this. It may not be structured as the other presenters had, but still I have all the content to share with you all. The main objective of this presentation is to treat the sugar effluent and demonstrate its reuse in an integrated aqua agro farming system. So this is the thing which... where is this?
It's the side button.
This one, center one? Okay. So let me first discuss about the treatment system that we have designed and executed. We used the constructed wetland system and also the fish pond for treating the sugar effluent. We took the source water was from the aerobically treated tank system that industry has. From there, the source water was taken and it was pumped into a filtration tank. And this is mainly to remove the larger particles, if there are any. And then we have constructed a wetland. And this constructed wetland, I will be discussing a little more in my next slide. This has 5 compartments and with different substrates into it as a filter media. And from the constructed wetland, the water is passed on to the sedimentation tank. And this sedimentation tank, actually, we are also using this tank to culture the fingerlings for the next season of our fish culture in the fish pond. And then from the sedimentation tank, it goes to the fish pond. From the fish pond, we are using it to the agriculture field. This is the schematic diagram of the treatment system that we have established. And... if you look at the, we used the subsurface flow and we have hybridized both the vertical and the horizontal flow into this constructed wetland. And this is the cross section and we have inlet, outlet. The C1 and C4 are the chamber 1 and 4 and the specification is like that. And C2, C5 and then the C3 we have bed. And if you look at the substrates of each of these chambers, C1 and C4 have the similar substrates where we have 40 to 60 mm gravel and which is loaded up to 0.6 meter and C2 and C5 with 20 to 40 mm gravel. And then the C3 is the mixed layer which we have. The bottommost has the largest gravel size and top of that is the 20 to 40. Above that we have 10 mm chips. Upon that, we have the sand, soil, and this thing mixed with the mixture of sand soil and red soil and clay soil, and we have planted the macrophyte on that. And if you look at the flow, the C1 has a vertical flow, and then the C2 has the horizontal flow, again vertical, and then horizontal, and then vertical. This is the wet water flow system that we have designed and executed. And just to have an, if you look at the aerial view of the one which was constructed, and then we inaugurated, and this is the current status of the treatment system that we have in place. And before we designed and executed this, we characterized the wastewater from the industry. And then once we constructed the wetland, we saturated the constructed wetland with fresh water so that the particles into it is flushed out, and also to stabilize the macrophytes that we planted in the C3 bed. And then we also continuously monitored the flow rates, because it is fixed, the inflow and the outflow rate are fixed. And also we regularly monitor the water quality both at the inflow point as well as the outflow point, and different stages also. And we could find a lot of indigenous algal growth inside the constructed wetland, and also the duckweed, which is natural growth. And especially in the third, the middle bed of the constructed wetland, C3, the algal growth plays a very significant role in the treatment process. And the wetland system is gradually now becoming a habitat for many floating macrophytes too. And we have also identified what are all those algals which is grown, because we could find nearly 6 to 7 type of algal algae growing into different parts of the constructed wetland. And we also did a hydrology balancing of that. We have taken the evaporation into consideration, and evapotranspiration and precipitation, as well as infiltration. Though the first filtration and the constructed wetland is all lined, the sedimentation and the fish tank has a sort of earthen bottom. So we have taken these 4 parameters, and we did separate experiments for the porosity, permeability, evaporation studies, as well as evaporation. In each of the substrates also, what is the rate of evaporation taking place, that experiments was also done. If you look at the average porosity of the constructed wetland is around 50%. And these are the experiments. And if you look at the average evaporation taking place in different months, if you take the data of different months, if you look at and calculate, the average evaporation is 0.266 centimeter per day. And if you look at C1, C2, C3 chambers, it is 0.65, 0.67, 0.64 centimeter per day. And this is the mass balance we worked out, taking into all those parameters. The hydraulic loading of is 2.91 meter per day, and the retention time in the constructed wetland is 6.5 days. The rate of inflow is 19.44 meter cube per day, and the rate of outflow is 17.7 meter cube per day. So this is the mass balance. Water quality analysis for the physicochemical characteristics we have done. And if you look at the pH, it is converted from the alkaline to the almost neutral pH. Mostly the both the biological as well as the chemical processes has contributed for this. And conductivity, we could not find much significant changes. There are certain considerable changes in the TDS and also in phosphate. If you look at 62.28% of phosphate removal is taking place, especially the third chamber is contributing. I'm extremely sorry.
Yes.
total alkalinity, total hardness also you could see some certain level of removal. But the COD is 92% of removal is taking place, and of which C3 bed is contributing the most. And this is the water quality changes, like right from the raw water till at the fish tank, fish pond, at the outlet at the fish pond, you could see how the color is changing as well as the characteristics is also changing. And if you look at the biological parameter, even before we were selecting the source of water for the treatment, we did a sort of analysis to understand the total microbial load, and we analyzed the water from the anaerobic tank as well as the aeration tank. We found that the load is little higher in the anaerobic than the aeration tanks. Then hence we decided to treat the aeration, the source water from the aeration tank of the industry. And then we also did a comparison of what is the change taking place in the microbial load, and we could find that the significant reduction is observed in the constructed wetland. And we also analyzed the pathogenic population, and it remained almost the same. And if at all there is any reduction, it could be seen mostly at the C3 bed of the constructed wetland. And even if you look at the change over a period of time, and there is increase in certain pathogenic load, and there is certain pathogens are maintained as such. And however, it is not, according to the Indian standards, it's not harmful to the humans or to the animals. And this is the sort of technique that we adopt for reuse. First, the treated water is reused in the aquaculture, and from the aquaculture pond, it is taken to agriculture. Here, mainly this is to get the dual productivity of water. The same water, the water which is treated from the, which comes out from the constructed wetland, is stored, first used to culture fish, and the same quantity of water again is reused into the agriculture, so that we are getting dual benefit or dual water productivity. And in addition to that, in addition to giving income, the aquaculture, the fish culture is also contributing or enriching the water quality. So it also contributes for fertilizer saving. So we just initially, we actually didn't culture fish in a commercial way. We wanted to see how the survival and the growth rate of the fish is happening in the treated sugar effluent. Hence, it was very extensive culture we did. We didn't go for an intensive culture. And we did the locally cultured species, which is widely cultured by the aquaculture farmers in the area where this project site is being demonstrated. So we could see a good luxuriant growth in in one of the species which was cultured. It is the Rohu and Katla, local carps. And one is performing very well while comparing to the other species. And it is also contributing for the fertilizer savings. See, nitrogen, it contributes for 37% of saving, whereas potassium, 100% of saving. And this is the species we cultured and we harvested. And in agriculture, we went in for the sugarcane because we are demonstrating this project in the premise of sugar industry, and the sugar industry wanted to demonstrate the reuse in cultivating sugarcane. Hence, we have selected sugarcane as a crop, and we are still yet to harvest the crop. It is almost 200 days old. It's the variety developed by the local research institute, Sugarcane Research Institute. And this is, this is actually the plot which is given by the industry for us to demonstrate this cultivation has two types of soil, the clay soil as well as sandy soil. Therefore, we are doing treatments, experiment in these two types of soil. one using the treated water and fresh water as a control. And either case, we could see the T1 is performing better. T1 is nothing but the treated water from our constructed wetland, which is passed through the fish pond. And we also, tried analyzing the soil salinity using the salt med model, which has been developed by one of the Water for Crops partner. And we could see that it is alkaline in nature. And in the clay soil irrigated with the fresh water, the alkaline was salinity was little highest, especially at 0 to 10 centimeter depth. And also it is classified as slightly saline to moderately saline class. And therefore, it was recommended to go for a saline-tolerant variety of crop as a management practice. And hence, we have selected that sugarcane variety, which is a saline-tolerant crop variety. And we had, as part of a capacity building thing, we have also taken some of the aquaculture farmers and the agriculture farmers to this site. And they have also given a very good positive feedbacks after observing both the treatment process as well as the reuse thing. And the key observations which was expressed by them is it is the low-cost technology. And if they would be happy if similar type of technology can be developed and harnessed into their field, mainly to control salinity in the water. And also, they admired the quality, what change in water quality, especially the color and the odor. And then they wanted a similar type of integrated farming system so that they will get better water productivity and income from their own fields also, and small scale level replication models. And if they also gave a suggestion, we could find algal growth in the fish tank also. They said if the algal growth is controlled in the fish tank, we can in little commercially valuable fish species can also be cultured in that tank. And then they said that there is no difference between the treated water irrigated sugarcane as well as the fresh water irrigated sugarcane. So we could also see that from the biometrics, which we are continuously monitoring and documenting. So this is all about the technology that we are using to treat the sugar effluent and the technology that we are using to demonstrate it so that we get a dual benefit out of the treated sugar effluent. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Sophia, for this very interesting presentation on these treatment technologies and that the benefits it can have in India. Let's open the floor to two questions. I think there's a lady here.
My name is Victoria. I'm a student in an agronomy school here in Montpellier. I was wondering, the price of this system, is it feasible for smallholders in, I'm guessing, India? I mean, is it still at research stage, or is it possible for people to implement this in their farms?
Actually, we have completed the research part. It can be replicated, and we are now focusing on to replicate. It's not only, it can be used in any type of water. It's not only for the sugar effluent. It can be used for grey water. It can be used for any other. We are also demonstrating another site using distillery wastewater, wherein there also we are using the constructed wetland as a treatment. But we adopt a sequential model before we let into this constructed wetland. We treat the distillery effluent with bacteria, then algae, and from there we pass it on to the constructed wetland. So almost the research aspect is completed. It is ready to replicate, and it can be applied to any type of water, wastewater.
The We have a similar experience in extractive wetland in Egypt, and we use fish farming at the end for cost recovery. You know, operating such system need money, and this is overburdening. So we ended by fish farming so we can have a cost recovery. There is one my problem was institutional. Who should manage the system? If you'd like to go to replicate the system, as a research is okay. I mean, you can do it as a research. Yeah. But if you are going to replicate this one, it should be like a private or semi-private or semi-governmental. It would be an issue how we can manage if you are going to replicate this one with cost recovery.
Yes, sir. Actually, this is at the level what we are going to implement it. If we are going to implement this in a very, very small scale level at the farmer's field, like earlier the other speaker was talking about the household level, where it is very, very low cost and it is adaptable to the household, and similar type of technology is almost most of the farmers are expecting and welcoming such things. So when it is at the farm level, the farmers will be the total responsible person. And if it at the municipal level, then it should be a sort of a decentralized thing where different partners should come together, and we have to institutionalize the entire process, bringing different partners together. So if not in this context, but we have experience in running such type of replicating such type of models in other context. So it depends on the levels and the stakeholders who would be the beneficiary, the users. And if it is industry will be the sole, because the primary users are the industry. The industry is very happy because their water is getting cleared and they are also getting some benefit out of this. So it depends on the levels and the users of this particular technology.
Okay, thank you. I have a question. I wonder what is the maintenance cost for the wetland?
Actually, we are working on the cost benefit now. Now that actually, except for regular monitoring, the algal biomass is actually little rapid, though not very rapid. It is rapid. So that removal, actually, we have to do the maintenance as of now. Otherwise, the maintenance part, we don't have any much task to be done. The operational, of course, we have to be regularly this thing. So now we are actually working on the operation and maintenance. No, not only operation and maintenance, the cost benefit, the complete cost benefit, which will be available in the couple of months.
I think the question not the cost, but it's a comparative between the wetland system and conventional system. Because you need to treat the wastewater. So it's not a matter of the cost rather than comparative between the other system. But the system, roughly, from our experience, is the non-conventional system or natural system, the cost of the operation cost is something like between 30 to 40, less than 30%. For the conventional system, because there is no energy required or chemical addition. But the problem with the wetland system is the land acquisition, land requirements. So whenever you have land available, the system will be very matching with your situation. But in urban and suburban areas, it might be a problem to find the land requirement to satisfy the requirements. Because the land requirements is 10 times the conventional system.
Point taken. I think these kinds of solutions need to be adapted to the whatever local situations there are. Are there any other questions? Well, thank you very much, Dr. Sophia.
Thank you.
Well, we're in a very unique situation. I think it's a very good opportunity, actually, or at least for Bruno and myself, because this is, I think, it's been a very interesting session, this one and the previous one. I've quite enjoyed it. Sometimes these scientific conferences, you start to fall asleep, but it's definitely not been the case for me this time. I can see that a few of the presenters from the first session are still here as well, and I'd like to take advantage of the fact that there are so many of these great minds in the room today, because one of the outputs of the ECID conference is to take away some key messages. And so I shall be with Bruno at the concluding session making some key messages. And I think because we have some time, I'd like to open up a discussion. And what are the key messages that we as a group, as a community, around this theme would like to come out of this conference and that we should be taking further out of the conference and into the future? Now, I'd like to start with the question of the theme of this particular session, which is, what is the potential for wastewater in agriculture? So today already we've talked about, you know, some issues with technical issues, with flow issues, some of the institutional issues. But I'd like to hear from you as experts, what are the key messages you'd like to hear us taking forward out of the session today? I open the floor up for discussion.
I think it's public acceptance and public awareness is very important, because sometimes everything can go well, but without public acceptance, the system, it will fail. So the people, like our culture, like in my country, they prefer to have fresh water, saline water, brackish water, rather than waste water. So the understanding of the people, the acceptance, we should make some efforts to convince the people that we have to move to use the marginal water, because there is a crisis. The people, the farmers are very simple. They see the water going in the river or in the canal, they don't believe that there is a crisis. We need, as a scientist, we need to have public awareness efforts to make the people think about that we have to move and accept the idea of using marginal water. This is first one. Second one, like most of the treatment system move to conventional treatment system, as if there is a loop, make you to move in this system rather than to natural system. Whenever in our countries there is sun, there is land available in the desert, like in my country, I feel like we have solved our problem to move to natural system for most of the cases. But I feel there is external force like to make you think about inside the box about conventional system rather than go to low-cost technology, including the natural system. We need to break this loop and think about how we can strengthen the research and application to move to low-cost technology, including the natural treatment system.
We've lost our helper, but we've got a new one.
Thank you. I think in this concern, in institutional aspects sometimes are most complicated than the technical solutions. For example, as Dr. Ashraf mentioned, in developing countries, they have very, very strict laws, yes, for water quality and for wastewater treatment. They are looking for secondary or even tertiary treatment. And in the meantime, they don't have the enough fund or budget for such high technology. And they refused completely to look for example, primary treatment. Sometimes if you do primary treatment, you can get rid of more than 80% of the pollutants, and you can use maybe 20% of your expected budget, which you use for secondary treatment. Such institutional issues should be considered, and ways of thinking should be changed. This is one point. The second point that there is no cost recovery for wastewater treatment. In developing country, there is no cost recovery. The governments cannot take all this burden. Yes, to treat the whole wastewater. This is another point. And the third point, how private sector can be involved in this concern, how private sector can be involved even in treatment, and then he can sell the water to the farmers, or he can get treated water from government with a certain fees and sell it to the farmers. This is some of the major points, yes, in institutional issues. Thank you.
Thank you. Other comments?
Thank you, everybody. I'm Shoaib Saburi from Afghanistan, studying in Japan. For me, in today's session, one of the key messages is that me as a young professional in water issues, most of the technologies and techniques were today I heard about the wastewater reuse for irrigation. Some cases will not be acceptable in countries which are developing in terms of land acquisition or investment and budget. And I think there are a lot of windows for us, for the young people, to work more to find the better way to solve these issues and come up with a good technology in the future, because most of the developing countries so far has no such kind of systems, even developed or non-developed, to reuse the water. So it gave me the message to work hard and find the newest with the cheapest and easiest way to be acceptable and implementable in all over the world. Thank you.
Thank you. Very optimistic message, and we need that from our younger professionals.
I think the I have calculated the potential use amount of United States and China. So in United States, the wastewater reuse amounts for 5% of the total water resource irrigated for agriculture, irrigated water. For China, now the reclaimed water reuse for irrigation is 5 billion cubic meter. So up to 2020, I think the most maximum potential amount for agriculture about 15 billion to 20 billion cubic meter. Also, I think it's about 5% of the agriculture water demand. I think this maybe for agriculture water use, the wastewater reuse for agriculture is the maximum percentage is about 5% from the data United States and China. I think the wastewater reuse has two aspects we should concentrate in the future. The first one is technique. So today we have several good reports for different kinds of technical solutions for such as for farmers or such as for factory wastewater treatment for irrigation, or for large treatment plant, a large discharge for large city discharge for the irrigation. So the just like in China, I do some research about the reclaimed water irrigation. Sometimes it is difficult to encourage the farmers or government to use the reclaimed water to irrigate because they're afraid of the agricultural products is polluted by the reclaimed water. So, that will affect the output price. So, on the other hand, is we should do some advertisement in different level. Not only for the government official, but also for the farmers or for the public. So, the third one, I think they should do some further research not only for the parameters such as pH, COD, BOD, but also a concentration on the organic proteins. So today, I haven't seen some report about organic proteins because most of the report are from developing country. So maybe in this field, we don't have many good conditions to monitoring or assessment. So in the future, I think organic proteins maybe is a very important focus, I think. Thank you.
Behind first.
Thank you. I think there's generally been a very sort of positive spin put on this, but just want to remind ourselves that I think a price or a cost that mustn't be neglected is the long-term monitoring that needs to take place. You know, the research is, because water qualities can differ so much and site characteristics can differ so much, the research is never really finished. We also need to just keep monitoring those systems over very long terms and really understanding the fates of those solutes or those pollutants, you know, not just at the local scale, but also at the catchment scale. So I think, you know, someone needs to pay for that as well.
Yes. To bounce back of this issue of paying for wastewater treatment, in most European countries, when we pay for our water bill, 60% of what I pay for my drinking water is wastewater. And then we have mechanisms, call it a water agency, environmental agency, water boards that manage some of this money and allocate some of this money for the city council. And the city council have to go to the private sector, it's open bidding, and this is how we get wastewater treatment works. We have lobbies and tendency, we had side discussions, to go so for more and more technologies. So when you talk about conventional activated sludge, we are talking about, in Europe, more and more membranes technology for wastewater. And in many cases, constructed wetlands do the job also. So we don't pay directly for this part of the cycle, but we pay through drinking water. But since it is a cycle and there are some institutional arrangements, and in Europe there are 27 ways of dealing with it, and 27 examples, and probably from other parts of the world. Second comment that I want to do is, apart from pathogen contamination, we didn't talk about the other bad guys, the heavy metals. And well, a key message I would propose is not all type of wastewater are suitable for irrigations. We know when wastewater contains organic elements, bacteria, biology will recycle it, but you just need small batteries to pollute, and then when you get cadmium, for example, chromium and so on, that will affect plant yield, definitely. So a separated system or knowing what is your wastewater, the quality of wastewater, and knowing what you want to do with it is super important to put the correct process, I think. And while heavy metals was a big concern and accumulation in all, let's say, Europe, I just know about Europe, in the 80s, 90s, now we know how to monitor and to control it. There is, a big problem is new organic contaminants, paraben and alike, phytohormones, they are affecting fish biology, invertebrate biology, and potentially plants. And that is still a big question mark. And what I'm talking about is the soap, the gel, the shave cream, toothpaste that we are using, that everybody is using all around the world. And that is probably the big research and legal problems that we're going to have, and that we're having now, actually.
Thank you very much. Are there any other comments? Oh, yes, sorry. Yes, please go ahead.
I just want to say that I think all of what you said is extremely relevant, but if you don't include this reflection at starting at school with young people, you will not, I think, make a change for a very long time. If you explain these new technologies, even the small holder systems that were presented just before, if you don't explain them at the youngest age and you put them in people's mind, especially in the poorest areas in the world, they will not want to change, because why try something which might not work when what they do works, has been working for such a long time? So I think it's very, very important to focus also on education, all other aspects aside.
Thank you. What a very valid point.
I would add one point that was raised by our South African colleague. I think that from what he was explaining, it is clear in my mind, and I hope it's yours, that if you try to separate from the beginning the different wastes, you will win a lot more than mixing everything and finally contaminating the grey water, which is not so contaminated, with brown water. And so if you are managing to separate from the beginning and to shorten the cycle, I think that we could win part of the battle.
Thank you, Bruno. Are there any other comments? Yes, go ahead. We have time.
More elaboration about what Dr. Samia mentioned, that's private sector participation, because now the government, it's now the budget to treat the old waste is overburdened. So it's the time to have private sector participation, at least for the reuse section, reuse part. When you have a wastewater treatment scheme, should include in the scheme the reuse. What's the problem with the reuse? That's we start to construct the treatment and operate and think what we can use, what we can do with treated wastewater. No, it should be from the very beginning in the planning, design, and operation. And we should have an agreement about what we should do with the wastewater, mostly with private sector, because private sector like always to win, not like the government. Government do the job, but the private sector would like us to win and to get some benefits. So to make it works, make it the wastewater part of the scheme and make private sector participation share part of this component to make it success.
Well, thank you very much. I think that was another valid point. We picked up quite a few in this last session. Are there any other final comments? We're getting towards, I don't know what you'd call it, beer time, wine time, coffee time. I might ask Bruno if he has some final words before we wrap up the session.
Well, I want to thank all of you and thank in a double way because you have helped us to write the conclusion of the session. Thanks to the fact that one of the speaker is not there, so we helped us to write all the most of the outline of this session. And thank you very much. And I wish you a good evening, and see you tomorrow morning at 9:30. No, 9.
9 o'clock.
9. Okay. Have a good evening.
Thank you. The session is closed.
是不? We have all the conclusions. Yeah. All the conclusions. We have all the conclusions.